Welcome to Start to Finish Motherhood, a podcast for those thinking or already single mothers by choice, just looking for practical advice for navigating life's relationships. When you decide to have children on your own, it doesn't mean that you're completely alone. I'm Aisha Jenkins, and I'm partnering with you every step of your journey.
Hey, before we dive in, if this show has added value to your life or provided insight to your parenting journey, you can support it by buying me a coffee. Visit starttofinishmotherhood.com/coffee. Now let's get into this episode. So this was my very first Ask Me Anything episode. In this episode, I address questions around how I told my family about my decision to become a single mother by choice. I answer, is there a right age to become an SMC? And then other common questions that I get. And then here are some updates to this episode. Let's see, career-wise, in 2024, I hit a wall. I totally burned out at work and I had to do a hard pivot. I needed to do a hard reset. I took a trip with my family and now I am doing individual consulting in my field. I love it. I left my comfortable job. I chose my mental health and I started my own consulting. So I work on my own time. I love the work that I do. I really enjoy the environments that I'm in and the people that I get to engage with on a day-to-day basis. I love the flexibility. I enjoy having my name attached to my work and contributing to the technology in a way that only I can. So during this episode, I also talk about the role that being an adjunct professor has played in my career. I started as an adjunct teaching. I started adjunct teaching back in 2006, and that experience has come in handy during my career pivot. I took my knowledge and my skills back into the academic arena, and I'm structuring learning in a field in a way that centers justice, centers ethics, and centers marginalized identities. So I am back in business, more to come on my pivot in future seasons. Let's see, finances. As I mentioned in this episode, I've always been a rainy day fund kind of girl. I have had cushions. I have money stashed under the couch. I have money stashed in piggy banks. And this has allowed me to really weather the downturn and this pivot in my career and the downturn in the, so this has allowed me to really weather the downturn in the 2025 job market. I had to move from one type of a financial planner that was really cushy and really comfortable to a financial planner that is more aligned with where I want to be. I am shifting into being a freelance consultant. So I need to handle my money in a different way and be able to bridge the gap between the variations in income. And so the approach to handling and structuring my money needs to be different. And so I need a wartime financial planner. And that's what I went out and got one. Let's see, talking to the children about donor conception. So in this episode, I talked about discussing donor conception with school friends. In this episode, I talked about the children discussing their donor conception with school friends and teachers and my foray into being more public about my family structure. And at the time of this episode, I had a toddler who was in preschool and I had a child who was in first grade. And so there were conversations around conception and family structure in preschool because the kids would see parents come and go, right? In elementary school, not so much because the pickup and drop off is so varied. Some kids go to an after school program by bus. Some kids walk to and from school, ride to and from school. Some kids get picked up in the kiss and ride. And so there's not so much seeing the parents come and get the kids. And so now schooling is more about the kids and their social dynamics rather than their family's composition. So now with a sixth grader and a first grader, there is almost no conversations about conception and family structure. Let's see, the pool of families is larger. They're more diverse. There are grandparents involved, just different family structures. The school that we attend is also really diverse. So those conversations have rarely been conversations that I've had to have with the school. Now at home, I'm having more concrete conversations about conception as the children are getting older. Noelle, especially, she's going through, we're talking more about being a tween, menstrual cycles, and we're talking about, you know, they have family life lessons at school. So we are having more of those conversations, which I love. And she starts blushing, but she's asking questions and I love talking to her about it. So now she's asking specific questions about her donor conception. And she talks to her sister more, which prompts her sister to ask me questions. So now we just have this open flow of communication, which I love. My conversation around conception still centers around what it takes to make a baby. It takes egg, sperm, uterus, and love to make a baby and to become a family. And so that's kind of, you know, that's our sweet spot. And so that's where we are. And so, yeah, the conversations involve the three of us. And then I also speak to each child separately. They just love hearing their conception stories. They love looking at their baby books. And so we have also met some more donor siblings for my oldest child. I have not found a lot of donor siblings for my youngest. So that's where we stand with the updates. And so let's listen to this throwback episode together.
Welcome to our Ask Me Anything episode. So this is our last episode of the season. We've gotten some really good questions from our listeners, and we wanted to address some of them today. So let's get into these questions. How did you go about telling your family your plans to become an SMC? So context for my life. So my parents are deceased, and I grew up with a slightly religious Christian foster mom who was in her 60s, and I'm a rules girl. So when I made the decision to become an SMC, it was a big step for me because I come from divorce where I was doing it almost the right way in a partnership, almost the right way that I was trained to believe was the right way in a partnership, two-parent household. That was the reality and it was right within my fingertips. And when I got divorced, all of that got shattered. So when I decided to become an SMC, it was a journey that I had to go through. So I didn't arrive at it lightly. Now, I mentioned the parental part because I had to only tell my siblings. And so there is not a mama, may I type of dynamic there. There is a, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. And that was pretty much how I approached it. Now, I got the typical, could you do this? Could you do that? Maybe you shouldn't have kids. And that's okay. And I really like what Hera said is once you make your decision, sit with it for a while because it's your decision. You could sit with it for a number of months or years. By the time you make the statement to your family, they are hearing it in the moment and they are reacting and responding in the moment to something you have had years to prepare your mind, your heart, and your life for. So you're going to get a varying degree of responses. So just be aware of that. Don't internalize any of the responses, though some might hurt in the moment. Give it time. But don't let that hold you back from pursuing the thing that you think is important, your important next step in this path. So for me, I didn't have the overhead, but I did have to take years to arrive and unlearn in my own head the right and standard way of becoming a mother.
Next question. Do you think there's a right age to become an SMC?
I'm not going to say that there's a right or a wrong age to become an SMC. I think that maturity will depend on the person, but I absolutely think that you have to be ready for this path. There are a lot of challenges in the path. You love your kids, but trying to figure out how to juggle the day-to-day life of an SMC requires knowing where to find resources, knowing how to build your village, having a lot of self-awareness because it's just you. And for some of us, too much of me can be too much for someone who is two or three or six. So you have, there are traits that I think you want to have in place. I'm not going to say there's a dollar amount that you want to have or a particular level in your career. I say be strategic about how you're stacking your money, because this path does require funds, whether it's for childcare, whether it's for building out a nursery, whether it's for moving. And I would say, take a look at your career. If you have time, I would actually map out different pathways in my career, times when you can move, times when you need to sit still, maybe during pregnancy and post-pregnancy. I would be intentional about the steps. You can absolutely be in your mid-20s and finishing up school and deciding SMC is the path for me. And I say, give yourself the couple of years to situate your life for that, because you do have time. I personally became an SNC. I started thinking when I was in my early 30s, and then I did not start trying until I was about 37. So between, I'd say probably 32 and 37, I did a lot of thinking, a lot of maneuvering, a lot of saving. I think at one point I was working three jobs. I had two adjunct professor jobs, and I was a full-time traveling instructor for a software company, but I just kept stacking that money for a rainy day. So not only was I a rules girl, I was also a rainy day fun girl. So that's my response. I don't think that there's a right age. I think that there is a right mindset and a right framing for becoming an SNC. The moment you get your fertility testing results back, that's pretty much when I'd say probably 65% of the women will come back and say, okay, I'm doing this now, because now they have information and they're informed.
Do you think the fertility industry, like insurance, clinics, physicians, are discriminatory towards single moms by choice?
Yes, I definitely think so. Because if you look at your policies, the policies are geared toward if you as a couple, so this is specific to the insurance. If you as a couple have been trying for 6 months after a certain age and you're not getting pregnant, then you are now bequeathed this bucket of benefits, right? Mm-hmm. And then as an SMC, you could have been trying with a romantic partner and it didn't work out, but that doesn't count. And so then what are you doing? You're sitting there looking at this bucket of funds that you can't touch. And in particular, as a woman, you could have legitimate internal issues with regards to conceiving. And so I do believe that it should not be like if you as a couple, right? And you'll find that language actually in some of the insurance policies and employee manuals. So that's a bit frustrating. I will say with regards to clinics and physicians, I think they're trained and their bedside manner is what it is. And it should be like an equal level of treatment. But I could tell you that in this day and age, they have to broaden what that bedside manner should entail and should be conducive to different family structures, right? So if I come in as an SMC and I do know that and I don't have a partner and I have to attend each of my doctor's visits in a good situation where you're getting good, happy news, that's great. But I think that you should make sure that you're covering the whole patient if they come in and prepare them for bad news, and not just prepare them for bad news, but prepare them to sit with an advocate with that news as well and make sure that you follow up. Because I did have a really devastating miscarriage where my fertility clinic really dropped the ball on following up and following through. And they knew I was an SMC. And so I left that appointment at that time and I followed up with the different things that I had to do physically for myself. But at some point, the nursing staff, the doctors stopped following up with me. So there was a lull where I had retained placenta and did not know that this was happening. And at some point, they stopped contacting me. And so that was a problem. It could have been a catastrophic problem, but I do think that in this age of different family structures, different ways that people are coming to conception and the amount of money that we're spending, I believe SMCs do require the best and the same. And so they have to be prepared to fill in some of that gap that you might be without a partner. So you might need a bit of extra handholding. I think that's fair and equitable. The person who helped me the most navigate the system through that devastating miscarriage was another reproductive endocrinologist that I turned to get help because I needed a doctor with a different bedside manner. So I took all of my toys and I took my money and I took my finances and I went to another clinic who then did advocacy on my part to the other clinic. And so I say also, it is okay to share with other physicians the types of experiences that you're having because they may be able to provide some additional insight and resources that you had not thought of before. Next question. How do you talk to your kids about being donor conceived? I got started in the national SMC space. And in that space, it is the norm to say, tell them early, tell them often about their conception story. And I go a step further in that I look for intentional ways to introduce different family structures, to introduce our conception stories for my girls, because they do have two slightly different conception stories. And I will say, tell them early, tell them often, because a lot of it is you getting used to what the story is, you becoming comfortable, you having navigated the space as an adult to know what types of questions the kids might get, having listening to what goes down on the playground, because it goes down on the playground.
Like playground politics.
It's a hot mess. But preparing your kids to walk in their truth, to embrace their story. And because the teachers, once your kids enter the school system, it all breaks open. It will come at them from different directions. Teachers will ask them and challenge them about their family structure. And then they will have to go into their conception story. Other children will challenge them. They themselves will see other parents and family structures at pickup and drop off. So your kids are going to have these questions. I know some in the SMC space will say, oh, I want to find all the books that don't have a father in it. Or can you show me a cartoon that doesn't have a father in it? And I'm like, let's mix it up. I want my kids to see all kinds of family structures. And that includes families with a mom and a dad, mom and a mom, or grandma is my mom, or something like that. And so that's important. So I don't necessarily shy away from those books either or those TV shows because they also add to my arsenal of how I'm going to equip my kid to tell the story and allows me to practice different ways because before they can read any story you read, you can make those words be whatever you need them to be. At some point, they will be like, Mommy, that's not what it says. But up until that point, you can practice with talking about the different words, the names, the family structures. And so I do that all along the way. So we have had the conversation about you have a donor, right? And so we are also entering into the space where I have to tell my daughter that she has an egg donor, my youngest. So how do I work that into our story? What does it take to be a family and things like that? So I'm still in the learning process of how I'm going to tell my youngest daughter about being donor egg in a way that my oldest daughter is not going to blab. Right. And so I have to balance that telling of that truth. For now, we're a team of three and we're powerful and we love it. But at some point, I'm going to have to tease out the slight differences in their story. And I'm preparing. So in that case, I have not yet started verbalizing that. I'm still focusing on the donor conception because I do want to sit down and talk with my youngest specifically about the special bond that we have. So I think tell them early, tell them often. Don't necessarily shy away from books that have a father in the story because hopefully you're modeling in your village all different types of family structures. And that's the way the world is.
What are some of the things you considered when preparing to add an additional child to your family?
Well, I will say we can decide and God will laugh. Right?
Yeah.
My intent was to have my children be 2 years apart. I thought that would be the ideal spacing. I had scoped out childcare because finances was a deciding factor for me. Could I afford 2 in childcare? And I stalked my daycare center for the entire duration of trying for my second child to make sure that I could afford 2 in daycare because I would have had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And that plan, my journey to my second daughter was 3 years almost. And so, but here's what I did. I knew that my daycare center had one rate for a child based on their age, but they also had a sibling discount, and they had a discount if you paid for the full month. I factored that into the financial plan. And so that told me at the very least I could afford two in daycare. And then I proceeded to try for my second when my eldest was 1 year old, and it ended up shrinking out to 3 years. I had them, and there's a 5-year age gap between my girls. And so whatever age gap you get is going to be ideal, is what I hear. And mine ends up being pretty ideal, because now I have a 2-year-old and a soon to be 2-year-old and a soon to be 7-year-old. And in terms of that spacing, I don't have to deal with potty training for the eldest. There's not a whole lot of overlap in where they are developmentally. And so I can really focus on the needs of the little one at a point where the older one wants to be independent. And so for me, my 5-year age spacing feels right, but I didn't just arrive at 5 years. It was something that I went through the process. Yes. So if you really enjoy our content, the best way that you can show your appreciation is to leave us a comment wherever you listen to your podcast.
Thanks for listening to Start to Finish Motherhood with Aisha. If you want to keep the conversation going, follow Start to Finish Motherhood on Instagram or email me at aisha@starttofinishmotherhood.com. If you love this episode, please share it with anyone who's thinking of becoming a single mother by choice, anyone who's already parenting as a single mother by choice and just looking for advice on navigating it all, or a friend or family member who's looking to support someone else's single mother by choice journey. Until next time, bye now.